From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment and our connections with it. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak.
A genetically modified organism, or GMO, is one whose genetic material has been modified through the deliberate mutation of its genes.
Genetically engineered crops are those that exhibit a desired trait, like being immune to weed killers or pesticides or increased nutrient levels.
The United States, no surprise, is the world leader in growing genetically engineered crops covering almost 258,000 square miles, or an area three times the size of the state of Utah.
In fact, 85% of all processed foods like cookies, potato chips, and breakfast cereals contain GMOs. In the U.S., GM corn is registered as both a food and a pesticide.
Uh-oh.
Yummy.
There's no doubt that genetic engineering increased the growth and production of crops, but at what cost to our environment and to our health?
The film GMO, OMG, explores all that and more. It's showing at the Jim Santee Auditorium this Thursday at 7 p.m. We'll discuss the film and GMOs with Andrea Morgan, an organic farmer with Renewy Gardens located in Hoytsville.
That's all in the first half of the show. And then in the second half of the show, Chris and I have some environmental news highlights and notes, including the latest on the Pebble Mine, including Rio Tinto's divestment, earthquakes in Oklahoma, mm-hmm. and what may be causing them, and the latest on Arctic sea ice.
That's right. You can join in on today's discussions by posting your questions or comments on our Facebook page, KPCW This Green Earth, or email us at thisgreenearth@kpcw.org.
The environment, our connections with it, and our impacts upon it. That's what This Green Earth is all about. We'll get started right after these words from our underwriters. Stay tuned.
Hi, this is Steve Roney with Prudential Utah Real Estate, a proud supporter of KPCW. With more than 100 sales associates and 14 gallery or ski-in offices in Park City, Prudential Utah can help you with your residential or commercial real estate needs. More information at pru-utah.com or with the Prudential Utah mobile search app.
Hi, this is Reese DeMille with Republic Services, your local source for recycling and garbage service, and a proud sponsor of KPCW's This Green Earth. As you recycle, please remember, glass cannot go in your residential curbside recycling bin. Help keep Summit County Recycling clean. SummitCountyRecycles.org.
Foothill Oriental Rugs has been an underwriter on KPCW for over 20 years. I'm Jim Weber, owner, rug buyer, and Park City resident. As a direct importer since 1985, from traditional to contemporary to tribal, Foothill Oriental Rugs is Utah's complete rug source. Foothill Oriental Rugs is located 2 miles north of the mouth of the canyon in Salt Lake City at 1460 Foothill Drive.
Welcome back to the screen.
Yeah, welcome back.
I'm Nell Larson, and that's Chris Cherniak.
Hello.
Across the board. And this morning we're going to be talking about GMOs.
Yeah. What are they? Did anybody listen to the introduction? I think we explained it pretty well.
We hope so. So today we will be talking about the film that's coming up as a partnership between Slow Food Park City and the Park City Film Series. And we will be discussing sort of the science behind GMOs with Andrea Morgan, an organic farmer with Renewy Gardens, a local farm right here in this local area. So Andrea, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you very much for having me.
If you can get a little closer to Mike, that would be great. So why don't you start by telling us just a little bit about the work that you do at Renewy and also your educational background in this field.
Okay. Well, I went to the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, Canada, and there I studied agroecology and sustainable food systems. I fell in love with farming about 6 years ago when I started working on the student-run organic farm that is associated with my program up there. So that was really the summer where everything changed, and I decided that I'd live a life of poverty as a farmer, no matter what.
But you had food.
I did, exactly. You always have food. You're
shelter,
working outside.
Clothing is another issue, but yeah, food.
Yeah. So, and well, and shelter and clothing also come from agriculture. So
okay.
Yeah. So you really learned how to be self-sufficient, and I was working with a great community of people that was really inspiring to me. They're all very active in a number of political areas. Mm-hmm. So that was really exciting. And then I moved back to Utah, where I was born and raised. I'm from Park City, a year and a half ago, and started working with Renewy Gardens out in Hoytsville. And they are great. They've been around since 1984, growing food organically. I think it's one of Utah's founding organic farms. Hmm. So
how large are they?
You know, they have two properties out in one in Oakley and one in Hoytsville. I'd say they're maybe cultivating 2 to 3 acres of annual crops.
What do they grow?
Herbs, flowers, vegetables. Yeah, herbs, flowers, vegetables, and they have some chickens. So eggs, which are a hot commodity.
Fantastic. And I'm assuming that the work that you do there, it's, you know, it's organic.
It is. Yeah, it's organic and biodynamic as well.
Wow.
Yeah, we're not certified in either. We just didn't want to deal with the paperwork anymore. But
okay. Yeah. So give us a quick sketch of what makes it organic and biodynamic. What are the components there?
So we follow all of the certified organic standards. Those are laid out by the USDA and by other certifying bodies. So we don't use chemical fertilizers. We don't use chemical pesticides, insecticides, fungicides, any of that stuff. It's all natural. We create our own compost or get compost from other farms that we know are organic, also using organic practices. Basically, we try to use as few inputs as possible from the outside world, from the chemical world. And what makes it biodynamic is we follow the biodynamic calendar, and that all gets fairly technical and mm-hmm. using the moon calendar and the cosmos and how the cosmos are moving around the planet. But I'll leave it there. And we basically follow a calendar. And
right. Maybe we'll come
can,
back
I was
going to
say, we can dig into that later if we've got time.
Yeah.
At the end.
Okay. So let's talk about this film then, GMO-OMG. And like Nell and I talked about in the intro, gave a little background on what genetically modified organisms are, and what genetically engineered crops are, the use of GMOs. And I was astounded at just doing the research at the percentages and the number of crops that are grown in this country that are quote unquote GMO based. And then of course all the food that's produced from that, either directly or indirectly. Do those numbers astound you too? Or I mean, are you amazed at
Not anymore.
They used to, like
yeah,
us?
Yeah, at one point they astounded me, but it's a very powerful force in this country. Monsanto and the lobbies associated with genetic engineering and biotech are very powerful, and it's very much a new wave of science that has a lot of influence over politics.
And is Monsanto the major player
they're
in GMOs?
They are a major player. They're
but
also
others.
The one receiving all the heat, and it's the name that everyone is starting to know. But there are other players as well, yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about the different types. You know, we talk about there's GMO-based corn, genetically engineered cotton.
Yep. Soy. Canola, sugar beets.
Sugar beets?
Yep, sugar beets. So any sugar that's coming from a sugar beet is very likely a GMO.
And so let's talk about, say, for example, the sugar. What is a GMO-based sugar beet? What is it? What's the purpose of that?
You know, sugar beets is actually the one that I'm not totally right. 100. I don't know what the transgenics of it are, but they are grown as feed for animals mostly.
But most of them are designed to ward off either certain types of pests,
exactly,
or
withstand an herbicide,
or an herbicide, a weed killer. So that's the nature of it.
Yes,
of what
that's
GMOs
the nature
do.
Of most GMOs. Yeah.
So, all right, we'll pick one then. Let's say corn. Mm-hmm. What is BT corn?
So BT corn has been spliced essentially with a bacteria that can kill the rootworm, which is one of the most pervasive pests for corn in this country. So the rootworm eats the corn and its insides are eaten.
Okay.
And it dies.
Okay.
But we now have rootworms that are coming back.
They've designed they develop a resistance.
Yeah, as a super insect.
So now there's BT resistant rootworms.
Yes.
And the thing is, though, that initial genetics was designed to control the rootworm, but not necessarily other pests, right?
Right.
So
yeah, not necessarily.
Just because it's BT corn is, you know, protects itself from one type of pest, it doesn't protect itself from all forms of pests.
No, it doesn't. It protects itself from soft-bodied pests, so things like worms.
Okay, but it may not be resistant to certain fungus or other types of things.
Exactly.
Okay.
We have other chemicals for that.
Exactly, and I think that's the point here, that just because it's BT corn or BT soy doesn't mean that it still doesn't get sprayed with other forms of pesticides or, of course, herbicides.
Exactly. The general practice is that it's kind of like a nasty cocktail mix on a lot of genetically engineered crops. You get one thing going, and then you get the next thing going, and then a super bug comes along, and so you dump more of something, or you have to create a new chemical to spray for the super bug, and it just keeps going.
Right.
So, So in addition to kind of some of this nasty cycle of needing one piece of technology to clean up after another, you know, what are some of the concerns about GMOs? You know, why are they a big deal?
They are a big deal for a number of reasons. We can get into each of them in depth, but I'll just name a few. So we have contamination of non-GMO crops from genetically modified crops, and there are patents on GMOs. So you have farmers who are not planting GMO crops having their crops contaminated because of the nature of cross-pollination in the crops that are GMOs. So wind from pollen on a GMO crop can blow into a farmer's field that is not GMO, and the companies that own that patent can come along, test the crops, and then sue for patent infringement. So that's one of the biggest problems for farmers.
Just because, again, the pollen migrated from their GMO-based acreage to a non-GMO, and it's in effect contaminated that non-GMO land.
And so then that farmer can no longer collect her seeds.
Exactly. Well, that's another problem. A lot of these GMO crops are designed to be terminator, is what they're called, terminator seeds. So they're sterile once they've been cross-pollinated and produced. So no, a farmer cannot collect the seed. And if she or he were able to anyway, they'd have to pay for the patent. They'd have to pay royalties.
Really? So there's actual cases going on like this where people who had wanted nothing to do with GMO-based crops are now paying Monsanto.
Oh, yes. This has been going on since the late 90s. I think it's something like over 900 farmers in the U.S. have been sued pretty much out of their life and livelihood by Monsanto. Most of those have been settled out of court. Some have been settled in court, usually in Monsanto's favor. And it's really destroying a lot of family farms that say no to GMOs.
Do you see any examples of that locally?
You know, I just came back here. I just moved back here, so I haven't heard any stories locally. I certainly know that GMOs are grown locally, mostly for feed for animals. But no, I don't know of any lawsuits.
Here
locally.
In the state, we grow a lot of alfalfa or other, you know.
Corn.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Are those GMO? Is there GMO
Very
alfalfa
likely the corn that you see in big monocrop fields is Roundup Ready corn.
Roundup Ready, that's the weed resistance that's built in, which we, Nell and I have had talked stories about. Now there are weeds that have developed a resistance to Roundup, you know, and so that cycle of evolution of resistance develops, and now you either need more Roundup or you need something other than Roundup.
Exactly, yeah. Not to mention, once you apply those herbicides, they're very persistent. They'll stay in the soil for years, essentially rendering the soil sterile, meaning that you need to add nutrients to the soil in the form of chemical fertilizers every year in order to just make plants grow because the soil is dead. So okay. That's another problem.
Yeah. So,
so you got that.
It's hard to stay focused when you start going down the wormhole.
It's the new name of the show. So you got that.
So you've got the crop contamination. You've got soil issues.
Soil issues, which leads to water pollution. As we all know, dumping chemical fertilizers, especially nitrogen, in soil in excess leaches into the water table. It's one of the reasons the Gulf of Mexico is a big dead zone.
Right.
So that's just one of the issues. Another issue is something as simple as corporate control over seed varieties and corporate control over genetic diversity. Once you have a corporation dictating to farmers what they can and can't grow, you lose that genetic diversity, that biodiversity that farmers have been building up for thousands and thousands of years, which, you know, trickles into the ecological food chain, the web of life.
Right.
In many, many powerful ways.
Okay. If you just joined us, we're speaking with Andrea Morgan. She is a farmer, agriculturalist at Renewy Gardens in Hoytsville. They're all organic and biodynamic.
Yes.
Types of fruits, vegetables, and flowers.
Yep.
And actually, in a way, we're talking about the film that's going to be shown this Thursday at Jim Santee called GMOOMG. It's about one man's journey, attempt to figure out how our food is grown and raised in this country, and what percentage of the food on our plates comes from GMOs. And that's actually something we don't know, because in this country we don't label that, correct?
Exactly.
So let's dig into that a little bit. So what kinds of attempts have there been to regulate GMOs, and what regulations exist right now?
Well, the two most recent and biggest attempts were ballot initiatives in both California and Washington over the past couple of years, which were both shot down by voters very narrowly. The counter campaign to labeling was backed by Monsanto, the Grocery Manufacturers Association, which is a really, really powerful well-funded, well-backed lobby group. Mm-hmm. So they all got together, DuPont, Bayer, they all got together and funded a counter campaign around $22 million, I think, in Washington to shoot down the ballot initiative to label GMOs.
So that is a massive amount of money.
And what's their argument there? I mean, why would labeling
foods that
they contain GMOs would be a problem?
Yeah, their argument
is that a fear factor. They say that.
Oh yeah, exactly.
That it's actually safe.
That people won't buy those foods. It'll affect the economy.
So it's an unnecessary fear. They say
yes.
That the GMO. Okay, I tell you what. Let's take a quick break for some underwriters near the bottom of an hour. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about that fear factor. What some of the health effects are, short or long term. Some of the studies. And maybe dig into talk a little more about biodynamic farming.
Sure.
Among other things. All right. It's This Green Earth. We'll be back right after these words from our underwriters. Stay tuned.
This is Reese DeMille with Republic Services, your local recycling and garbage service provider and a proud sponsor of KPCW. Summit County residents are recycling more and more each year in their residential curbside recycling bin. Please help by putting acceptable recyclables in and keeping glass out. Thank you, Summit County. SummitCountyRecycles.org.
Hi, I'm Kelly from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake, and both offer complete design services. We're on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
This is Dana Edwards on behalf of Vail Resorts and Cannons Resort, supporting KPCW. This year, we developed partnerships with 25 local nonprofits to support programs like the fourth grade program at Swanner Preserve and Eco Center. Every fourth grader in Summit County will experience Utah's ecosystem firsthand and see science come to life through infield classes. Thanks to Swanner for making science cool.
We'll be right back.
back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues and news and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak. She's Nell Larson across the board. We're speaking with Andrea Morgan. She's a farmer at Renewy Gardens in Hoytsville, where they grow all organic and biodynamic vegetables, fruits, I think you said?
No fruit.
No fruits? Yet.
Not really.
Just say yet. No fruits.
Tomatoes are fruits.
Tomatoes
are
okay. Flowers. eggs. So you have biodynamic chicken.
We do have chickens. The ladies produce lovely eggs for us.
Oh, perfect. Perfect.
Fantastic.
Okay, so we got a bunch more questions. My first one, we were talking about labeling and the fact that here in the U.S., labeling is not required. So you can pick up processed foods and you wouldn't know if they're GMO type of vegetables or fruits or components were included in that food. But in Europe, labeling is required.
Yeah, labeling is required.
To identify if it's GMO.
Yep.
Okay.
And I believe China and Japan also require, or actually also just don't allow them.
Oh, that sounds stringent.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of ridiculous that we don't label it in this country. They say that 85% roughly of processed foods contain a GMO of some kind.
And the incredible thing about that to me is, you know, you listed a number of species that are, you know, often grown in a genetically modified form, but it's not that many species. And to think about that just, you know, corn or sugar or soy is making it into 85% of our processed foods is a little bit scary.
Yeah, it is. It's really wild. The best way, by the way, to know whether or not something is GMO is either to buy it certified organic. Organic standards do not allow GMOs. Or there's a new project called the Non-GMO Project that does its own third-party labeling. So anything with a non-GMO project label on it, you can guarantee that it's not GMO, even if it's not organic.
That's really interesting. So how long have systems like the Non-GMO Project been around?
They're all pretty recent. GMOs haven't really been out for that long. You know, late 90s was when the first were released.
My research says that 1984, Calgene introduced the Flavor Saver tomato.
Yeah.
It was one of the first GM.
Flavor Saver.
Yes. Yeah. It was more of a ripening type of agent. But it's only been around for 30 years or so.
Exactly.
So.
And it's really, you know, it's really just started to penetrate the food system on a widespread scale for the past, decade, two decades. So labeling, you know, as people become more aware of GMOs and want to know what they're eating, these sort of third-party labeling projects have come up.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's always been the certified organic piece, which guarantees that it's not GMO.
So this is bringing up a whole new set of concerns that aren't about the plant itself, but are about the impacts on people, on our health from eating these GMOs. What's happening in that area? What do we know?
Well, we don't know a whole lot. For one, we don't know who's eating GMOs and how often. So it's really hard to create any sort of a study on the public because they're just out there. We don't know. We don't know where they are. We don't know who's eating them. And the companies that released GMOs are the same companies that released the safety tests on these and the research. None of the raw data have been released to the public on these tests, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd think that it was in their best interest to not say anything if they did find something that that might be evidence of being unsafe. So we are starting to have third-party independent studies, peer-reviewed, that are trying to do some of these studies, but Monsanto is definitely on an intimidation campaign against scientists who are trying to do this.
So what form does that take? How do you discourage a scientist from taking
this on? You make
phone
calls. A lot of phone calls. You know, I've been reading accounts of some scientists who it trickles down or trickles up, I should say, into even conferences that they're supposed to be presenting at. All of a sudden, they're not invited, or their funding is taken away, or they get threatening and intimidating phone calls to stop doing the work. Where Monsanto offers to send some of their scientists into the lab to assist.
Okay.
How helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, so we know there's genetically modified vegetables, fruits, apples, oranges. Is that true in the fruit arena?
Yes. Apples have not been released yet, I don't think.
Okay.
I think it's one of the ones that is up for debate right now.
We talked about a while back about genetically modified salmon. Mm-hmm. So that is something that is coming to the market soon. This is just the salmon that just grows bigger, faster.
Right.
And so, but that's a genetic. That would be the first genetically modified. We'll call it
animal.
Animal.
Mm-hmm.
And are there others that you're aware of
that we would be consuming?
Yeah.
I do know of a totally freakish animal insect crossing, which is splicing spider genes into a goat so that the goat produces milk that has the same elements or compounds that that spiders have to create webs, essentially. So the goat would be producing milk that is very strong, military-grade web material, essentially. I'm not being very scientific about explaining this, but yeah, that's one of the ones that's being worked on right now. That's just like, what?
Right.
You're going to splice a spider gene into a goat?
Yes.
And then milk the goat for web material?
Well,
I guess so.
The answer is yes.
Sounds like it's from the future.
Right, but those are examples of genetically modification. Now, some people will say that, well, you know, nature does its own genetic modifications, you know, cross-pollination or we've modified crops. Farmers have done their own forms of hybridization of wheat and corn. How does that differ from the you know, this more transgenics type of genetic modification?
It differs in that even though it doesn't necessarily occur in nature regularly, it could, because you're using species, you're cross-pollinating in the case of plants, you're cross-pollinating species that are in the same genus.
Okay.
They're very closely related. We're not taking species that are in completely different kingdoms and then hybridizing them.
Okay.
That's not possible.
So for example, what?
So using natural mechanisms.
Exactly. Using natural mechanisms, enhancing them.
Okay. So like what Norman Borlaug did is the father of the Green Revolution and did all his work with wheat, producing, among other things, dwarf wheat that grew faster and hardier and in drought conditions. That's an example of what you're saying is more the classic style of cross-pollination and developing – it's synthetically, in a sense, it's a man-made wheat, but it's using nature's components in a more, safe, controlled way. There you go. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And humans have been doing that as long as agriculture has been around.
Right.
We've just been selecting for the traits that we like. This is just a totally, totally different realm.
Right. This is getting into it. This is altering genes, you know, at the most primary components.
Exactly.
Levels. Okay. And like you say, combining perhaps fruits with vegetables.
Yeah.
So I can get.
Or animals with bacteria or plants with bacteria or.
Apple with peanut butter in it.
Yeah. You can think of any combo, really.
I no longer have to take peanut butter and put it on my apple.
Just save. Save those 15 seconds.
Filled with peanuts and stuff. Okay.
Exactly.
So that's what we're taught. Okay.
So you know, with your background in agroecology and farming, one of the things that you, I think, have thought a lot about is food security. Yeah. And talk to us a little bit about that as it relates to our area. How are we doing in Summit County and what are the issues there?
Summit County is not looking so hot for food security.
Really? Okay.
Well, if you think about it, you know, where does most of your food come from? Does it come from the grocery store, or does it come from your backyard, or is it coming from a farmer down the street? I know that in the winter, even for me, you know, I try to stock up on root vegetables and things that will last over the winter, local meat, local roots, local grains. But I still find myself going to the grocery store every week and buying some vegetables from California.
Mm-hmm.
So food security really touches on what happens when those semi-trucks stop running. Are we okay or are we not okay? And if the semi-trucks stopped running in Park City, I'd be, or in Summit County, that would not be pretty.
Right, because your place is only a few acres in size. And
yeah, exactly. Renewy can't supply all of Summit County, neither can any of the other farms around.
Right.
In Park City proper, I believe there's only one farm, which is Copper Moose.
Right.
And that certainly isn't going to feed everyone for a full year. So that's one issue with food security. It's just, where is your food coming from? Is it coming from another state? Is it coming from another country? Can we produce it locally even? And that's another challenge that we face in this high altitude desert climate. We can't produce a lot of the crops that people just kind of take for granted that are just there on the grocery store shelves every day.
And it's interesting because, you know, I go into the local markets here, and at any time of the year, there is no less than 8 different types of apples, mm-hmm. that are offered me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, none of them are probably grown here.
Right.
Right. They're all traveling from thousands of miles away. I mean, some from New Zealand,
mm-hmm.
or so.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, do we as a society need 8 different varieties? And sometimes it's as many as 10 or 12 different varieties of apples 12 months out of the year. That's what we've become accustomed to.
Right.
And so I need all those different types of apples, and then here's 3 or 4 different types of pears or peaches and grapes. And of course I need fresh limes, you know, in the middle of February. God forbid if I don't have my fresh limes. So we as a society have become so used to having an abundance of things 12 months out of the year,
mm-hmm.
that we've lost the sense of that seasonal nature in us. That,
exactly.
You know what? Apples are 4 or 5 months out of the year.
Yeah.
And then you know what? You do without apples, okay?
Well, one interesting thing, just to comment on what you're saying, is yes, we do need 12 different varieties of apples. We need more than that. We need hundreds of varieties of apples.
Okay.
The ones that you see in the grocery store are actually kind of big monocroppy type.
They're gigantic.
Varieties. We okay. could grow older heritage apple varieties in Park City even. They wouldn't look as pretty as the
right.
ones that are in the grocery store. A lot of them are kind of weird looking. If you're growing them organically, especially, they're going to, you know, have some holes possibly from bugs or whatever. But we do need that variety, but you're totally right about the seasonal thing. We've become very used to having everything on demand 12 months out of the year, and that is not something that is sustainable.
Explain why it's important to have these different varieties, to have, mm-hmm. like, you know, hundreds of different kinds of apples,
mm-hmm.
or
potatoes,
carrots or lettuce,
right.
or potatoes,
right.
or
sure.
any of these foods.
Well, that's getting back to the whole genetic diversity, biodiversity part of it. Any ecological system is at its healthiest when there's the most diversity. So if something like a pest moves in and wipes something out, you still have 99 other varieties of apples around. What you know, getting back to the GMO discussion, GMOs are always grown in big monocrops. It's that big ag, hundreds of thousands mm-hmm. of acres model. So when one pest becomes immune to what's going on out there and it moves back in, it's all gone. It can get wiped out in a season. So if you have diversity, it's a safety net. It's that web of life that we all kind of rely on for, you know, a backup plan. It's an insurance plan, basically.
Right. No, that's a good point. So biodiversity is critically important. But my point is, you know, we don't need it every day of every year.
You definitely don't need Fujis from the thousands of miles away.
Right, from New Zealand or Red Delicious that
mm-hmm.
looked like they were rolled here from the state of Washington. They're just unedible.
Yeah, those are awful.
Okay, exactly.
Yeah, they may look beautiful, and it's become our like conventional view of what an apple should look like. But man, everybody knows that taste it's not what it should be.
Yes.
So we have a few more minutes. So let's talk a little bit about this film that's going to be shown and your role.
My role is I'm going to be part of the panel discussion after the film with Fred Montague, who I have never met, but he is a professor emeritus of biology at the U. And it sounds like it's going to be a really interesting panel discussion. So people are just free to ask us questions that relate to the film or that are brought up in the film after it's showing. The film, I believe I've actually seen this film, maybe in a film festival before its release. Mm-hmm. But if the trailer is perking my memory correctly, then it's a really funny, humorous, energetic film about a father's quest to find real food in America and uncover GMOs. And he involves his kids and travels around the country doing goofy little stints. And
We always appreciate a lighthearted approach to these issues.
It needs to be lighthearted.
It's won several awards. It's here. Right here's the information. It's this Thursday, April 10th. Starting at 7 p.m. at Jim Santee Auditorium. It's a 90-minute film, free.
Yep.
GMOOMG explores the potential loss of humanity's most precious and ancient inheritance, seeds. It follows one family's struggle to live and eat without participating in an unhealthy, unjust, and destructive corporate food system and the growing global movement to take back what we have lost. And like says, it will be a Q&A panel after the film.
And it's a partnership between the Park City Film Series and Slow Food Park City.
Yes, it is. Perfect. And I'm just going to plug one thing here.
Yes.
Eat Awesome Things at School will also be there promoting the work that they're doing in the schools to try and change the food system for your kids. So they'll be there as well. Wearing aprons with the Eats logo on them. And if you're interested, they have two of their first general meetings today. One is at 2 o'clock at the Park City School District, 2700 Kearns Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
And the next meeting, if you can't make that one, is at 5:30 in the Ecker Middle School Choir Room, room 138. Both meetings should be an hour long.
And I suppose both are today?
Both are today. Yeah, okay. Exactly.
Fantastic.
Eats.
Yeah, and they're doing great work to try and work on all of these issues in the schools in Park City.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
All right, Andrea Morgan with Renewy Gardens, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us this morning about work, your efforts. Does Renewy have a website?
Renewy does have a website. It's not fully up to date, but you can look us up online. The information hasn't really changed over the years, so even though the dates are off, it's there.
But location.
There's location, contact information, things like that.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And we'll see you at the farmer's market this summer, or somebody from Renewy.
The Wednesday farmer's markets.
Fantastic. Right.
And we'll see you Thursday night.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
Let's take a break for some underwriters, and when we come back, we've got some news items to cover: Pebble Mine, Oklahoma earthquakes, Arctic sea ice, etc. It's This Green Earth. Stay tuned.
Spring cleaning, moving, remodeling, donate your gently used construction materials and household items to the ReStore, your local home improvement reuse store today. Visit habitat-utah.org to see our list of accepted items or call 435-487-9015 to learn how to donate to the ReStore. Your donation helps keep thousands of tons of materials out of the waste stream and generates revenues for Habitat's affordable housing programs. Habitat for Humanity of Summit and Wasatch Counties is a local nonprofit organization.
This is Dana Edwards on behalf of Vail Resorts and Canyons Resort supporting KPCW. This year, we developed partnerships with 25 local nonprofits to support programs like the fourth grade program at Swanner Preserve and Eco Center. Every fourth grader in Summit County will experience Utah's ecosystem firsthand and see science come to life through infield classes. Thanks to Swanner for making science cool.
to this Green Earth weekly talk show on environmental issues. She's Nell Larson. I'm Chris Cherniak. And we got some time to cover some news items. Right, Nell?
That's right, Chris. You're right. You're not alone in here.
News items together?
Yeah, can you hear the wrestling paper?
Wrestling paper. Some interesting things across the wire this past week.
Yeah, I think we should start by talking about these earthquakes in Oklahoma. Go.
Yeah. Go. Yes, this is something I saw just last week. More and more earthquakes, more and more seismic activity, we'll call it, is showing up in Oklahoma. Most of these earthquakes are fairly small, relatively speaking, right? Now, if you're in Oklahoma, any earthquake is probably will get your attention.
Yeah, but these absolutely. Are, just because it doesn't, you know, knock the paintings off the walls doesn't mean it's
exactly. These are between 2 and 3 and sometimes a little beefier than 3.0 magnitude on the seismic scale. But there are dozens and dozens, if not hundreds of them being felt, more so than ever recorded. Here is an example. The Oklahoma Geological Survey representative says we've had almost as many magnitude 3 and greater earthquakes already in the first 3 or 4 months of 2014 than we did for all of 2013. Okay, so for example, last year's number of earthquakes broke a record, 222 in the state of Oklahoma. This year, in the first 4 months of the year, the state has recorded 253.
Already? So
they take the rest of the year off if they wanted, and they still break the record. They just go right into 2015 if they wanted.
So here's the especially interesting part, though. I mean, earthquakes are obviously a natural phenomenon.
Yeah.
They're always going to occur. But there's some thought that this might be happening due to
some
oil and gas
active
work,
and
fracking.
Not the necessarily the process of fracking, okay, but when the water, the millions of gallons of water that's used, is pulled out of the fracking operations, that has to be disposed of. And typically in Oklahoma, the method of disposal is to deep well inject it thousands of feet into the ground. And that's what geologists, scientists are suggesting is the cause of these tremors, the disposal of fracking wastewater, thousands
with, of cases. Speaking of cocktails of chemicals, with hundreds of chemicals in this fracking
And this
wastewater.
Water is effectively, unusable.
Right.
You know, so they just inject it below the aquifer. That's why they inject it thousands of feet down because they want to go below the aquifer.
Still doesn't seem like a good idea.
But as a result, the pressures that are used to inject it are creating conditions that are resulting in all these this seismic activity in Oklahoma. So that's Oklahoma is not the only state that is experiencing these things. They've had similar experiences in Ohio. I believe in Arkansas or so, other states that are using deep well injection for their fracking wastewater are starting to see increases in seismic activity.
It's incredible to see human activity altering the Earth's processes on such a massive scale like that. Like, we are injecting so much into the Earth that we are actually altering pressure points and seismic activity. That's insane.
We're making the Earth shake.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah. We're giving it a fever, and we're making it shake.
Oh, it's the worst.
What else can we do?
I know.
Well, let's see. What else can we do? Let's keep going. What's the next story?
The next story is good news. We like that. Yeah. So
how'd that happen?
The major news from yesterday is that relates to the Pebble Mine project. Mm-hmm. And you and I have talked about the Pebble Mine proposed project up in the Bristol Bay watershed in Alaska. And the issue here is that that's a major salmon fishery. The mine would essentially destroy that.
Mm-hmm.
But above and beyond just the environmental impacts are the social impacts, you know, the environmental impacts as they relate to people, which is that the native communities in those areas, the native tribes, they are
you know, their culture is based around salmon. Not only is it a food source, but it's a cultural thing.
Yes.
And so there's been a huge amount of opposition to this massive project. And some background on this is that in 2011, the Mitsubishi Corporation sold its interest in the project so that it was, you know, no longer part of it. And that left a few other companies. And then in last year, 2013, Anglo-American withdrew its 50% partnership in the project. And then just yesterday, Rio Tinto announced that they're pulling their 20% interest in this project. And they're donating their interest to a couple local groups that we'll talk about. But so that leaves just the relatively small Canadian mining company, Northern Dynasty Minerals, the 100% sort of owner of this project.
De facto,
Right. And so there's a question of, you know, will this company be able to manage and carry out such a big project, or even be able to fight the legal battles it has ahead of it to try to carry out the project. So, yeah, so Rio Tinto gave it $16 million worth of shares in the Northern Dynasty Minerals to the Alaska Community Foundation and the Bristol Bay Native Corporation Education Foundation, who has previously announced that they're opposed to this project.
Yeah.
And so in their statement about this, the organization said, you know, well, here's the quote. "The gift provides an example of what open discussion and relationship building between stakeholders with differing views can accomplish. However, opposition to the proposed pebble mine has not changed." So they stated that front and center.
Right.
But it'll be so really interesting to see what happens here.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Good job, Rio Tinto.
I know.
Well done.
I never thought I'd hear you say those words, but, you know, here we are. And then, you know, this Northern Dynasty company has also released a statement saying that we're pleased that the people of Bristol Bay in Alaska will now have a direct stake in the project. We believe that local ownership and local input can provide a significant benefit for the advancement of this project. So they're clearly hoping that these groups will say, oh, you know what? This money would be really helpful for our group if we develop the mine, so let's move ahead with it. And that kind of remains to be seen. Obviously, one group has already publicly said that they are opposed to it. But
things don't look good for a pebble mine.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
And that's okay. And
because do we need more copper and gold? Because that's what ostensibly it's mining. It's a copper and gold and a couple other metals.
And molybdenum.
Yeah, molybdenum. You know, we get along fine without it right now. I think we have plenty of copper. I go down to the Metek and see all their e-waste. They have lots of copper down there.
Well, I was going to say the issue is obviously we're going to have continuing demand for copper and gold. But if you have less, you know, being extracted from the earth, maybe we can look more at sort of recycling, reuse issues and alternatives
to
those
things.
What do you
want? You want copper or you want salmon?
Yeah. So one or the other.
Salmon, please. So
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good news.
It is good news.
Thanks, Rio Tinto. Okay, we got another story?
Yeah.
This
we're
going to
talk about
Arctic
sea ice.
Yeah, this one's about Arctic sea ice. It reaches its fifth lowest peak extent.
Fifth lowest peak, okay.
So every year, you know, around March, it's the ice grows to its greatest extent, its reach, and that's measured. And this year that happened around March 21st. And it turns out that was the fifth lowest extent ever recorded. Now, records have only been kept since 1978, so 35, 36 years worth of records, but this is the fifth lowest. The all-time lowest one was 2012. So it's a little greater than 2012, and of course people will champion that and applaud it. Like, see, ice is growing.
But now, when you look at averages.
The averages. It's decreasing decade over decade. The trends are that the extent of ice during the winter is getting less and less.
Approximately 2.6% per decade compared to the 1981 to 2010 average. So, I mean, it's
consistent over a larger length of time, not year to year.
And although we had a very, very cold winter here in the eastern U.S. and eastern portion of Canada, the Arctic experienced a very, very warm, above average winter around the Arctic Circle, the polar Arctic.
A lot of those really cold systems that would usually be up there kind of hit the
eastern part
of North America.
So fifth lowest extent on record, and that just sets the stage for what, you know, what's coming this summer, and we'll see, and that'll be tracked and see how what that means for its minimum extent. Okay.
Right.
So let's take one more break. When we come back, we'll do a wrap up, maybe a calendar
We've got a couple items. What's up on tomorrow's show? We've got.
Okay. We'll get to all of that right after this. This Green Earth. Stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Kelly from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake, and both offer complete design services. We're on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided by Longrimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com. Brett Stimson, mortgage assistant for home purchases, 801-201-3484. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
Welcome back to This Green Earth. Got a couple minutes. What is on the mountain life tomorrow?
So the mountain life, that's Tim Henney and Lynn Ware Peak. First half of the show, they'll be talking with Summit County Health Director Rich Bulla. And they will be talking about air quality, water quality, and more.
What?
Yeah.
I'm going to listen to that show.
Yeah. Sounds a little bit like This Green Earth.
Okay. We'll see. I'll probably tweet in some questions.
Perfect.
Okay.
And then second half of the show, the Park City High School academic decathlon team will be in. Oh. I think they had them on recently. And they'll be talking about what it takes to be on the academic decathlon team and tell you more about how you can be involved.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
All right. Any other calendar event? Anything happen at Swanner that we should know about?
Always. You know, this past weekend was a big one for us. We had volunteers out harvesting willows, and we had hundreds of people coming through for our spring celebration and a water quality class, and it never ends. But we have the second piece of our spring stream restoration, which is willow planting, coming up in a couple of weeks. And, you know, if people are excited to, you know, put in a little bit of manual labor to plant about 1,200 willows along East Canyon Creek, they should check out the Swanner website, and all the instructions are there.
Okay. Are those genetically modified willows at all?
They are native willows collected from local stands.
Let's be clear about that.
Let's be clear.
There's no GM. Okay.
Nope.
All right. Well, let's time to wrap up. Thanks again to our guest, Andrea Morgan from Renewy Gardens.
Thanks to Slow Food and Park City Film Series for putting on that GMO OMG film.
That's this Thursday
night
at Jim Santee Auditorium, 7 p.m. And it's free. And the panel will be really interesting afterwards. Stick around for that, too. Let's thank our underwriters for whom this show would not be possible. They include Republic Services, Habitat for Humanity's Restore,
Vail Resorts,
Rocky Mountain Power,
San Francisco Design,
Prudential Utah Real Estate.
And don't forget to join us on Facebook at KPCW This Green Earth.
And also you can email us your thoughts and comments about the show and ideas for other shows, thisgreenearth@kpcw.org. Remember, this is KPCW 91.9 FM, Park City.
Only in Park City, only on KPCW.